You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
I'm Julie Burstein in for Leonard Lopate today. 5 years ago, Karl Rove's resignation from the Bush administration was tainted by a public outcry surrounding the controversial firing of 9 U.S. attorneys. But his suspicion-clouded withdrawal from the White House was hardly the end of Rove's involvement in Republican politics. In Boss Rove, an article in the September issue of Vanity Fair, contributing editor Craig Unger explains how Karl Rove has risen again to prominence in the years since George W. Bush left office. And George W. Bush left office with the lowest approval ratings in the history of the presidency. The September 2012 issue of Vanity Fair is currently available in New York and Los Angeles and will be released nationally and electronically on August 7th. I'm pleased to welcome Craig Unger back to The Leonard Lopate Show. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you for having me.
Now, I know you have a book coming out about Karl Rove next month. How long have you been paying attention to him?
Well, I've been paying a lot of attention. I did a couple of books on both on George W. Bush, so I knew of Rove from that. But I especially became aware of his comeback after the Citizens United decision in early 2010. And this, of course, was a Supreme Court decision that has allowed the birth of the super PAC. And what I saw was just a few weeks later, in April of 2010, Rove had a luncheon at his home in Washington, D.C., on Weaver Terrace. And he invited, this was at a time when the Republican Party was a sinking ship under the leadership of Michael Steele. It could not raise any money if major donors were deserting it. And Rove had a luncheon, and this was very much the birth of the super PAC, where now we see Rove having literally $1 billion under his control to spend in the upcoming election.
Is it to Karl Rove's advantage to not have to play within the strictures of the Republican Party, to have been able to raise all of this money outside of what used to be the way to bring in cash?
Absolutely, and it is the way he has always worked. And you know, he is so visible that people may think they know him. I read somewhere that he has name recognition of 70% of the American people know who he is. So you think you know him, but there is so much that goes on beneath the surface. And if you go back to the 1980s, you can see that Rove was doing this kind of thing back in the 80s. That is, he was creating political action committees outside the Republican Party. And that meant that gave him enormous power over the Texas Republican Party, where he could actually decide who was running. He could operate outside the strictures of the party. And today, of course, you have the birth of the Tea Party, which is a movement that he doesn't really care for. And so operating outside the party has enabled him to sort of finesse all that.
You call this article Boss Rove, and as you're talking about this, I would expect you were hearkening back to the days of Boss Tweed here in New York City?
Yes, certainly a bit of that. I had to laugh as I was writing it. Rove himself had a column in the Wall Street Journal in which he said that there would be no brokered convention. If you remember, the Republican primary season got pretty silly with there was Michelle Bachmann, Rick Perry, and so forth, and Herman Cain. And for a while, it seemed Romney could not nail down the nomination. And he had a column saying that there would be no brokered convention because there were no party bosses today. And I had to laugh because he is the party boss.
You mentioned Citizens United. Can you talk about what that ruling has allowed Rove and others to do in terms of raising money for elections?
Right. Well, if you look at it in narrow legal terms, this there was actually a Supreme Court decision in 1976 called Buckley versus Vallejo, which sort of opened the door for individuals to make huge contributions to their own campaigns. And in some ways, Citizens United falls in has expanded a great deal more. But I think it's combining it with Rove himself, who is sort of a master of all this, plus the disintegration of the old party under Michael Steele. And it gave Rove an enormous opening to raise literally over $1 billion. What's sort of interesting is I think a lot of people had expected the money to come from huge corporations, but in fact, the vast majority of it, over 80%, is coming from private billionaires, that is, people like the Koch brothers, like Sheldon Adelson, Foster Fries, and so forth. Sheldon Adelson alone said he would put in $100 million for Romney.
In reading your article, one of the things became clear to me is that there are a couple of different ways this raising money outside of the party works, that there are the PACs, but then there are also not-for-profits, 501c3s, that are allowed to raise money. Can you talk about the difference between the two?
Right. Well, the 501c3s and c4s are what are known as social welfare organizations, and what is, it's almost comical to me the way the language has been butchered. If you read the Citizens United decision, the majority decision that was written by Justice Anthony Kennedy refers to it sees the decision in terms of freedom of speech. And it talks about not wanting to help the disadvantaged and deprived class of people to have a free voice. Well, the people, who are taking advantage of this ruling are multi-billionaires. They're the Koch brothers. They're Sheldon Adelson. And the decision itself doesn't allow to differentiate between the average Joe having his voice and these billionaires amplifying it with hundreds of millions of dollars worth in advertising. So you have two different classes, and in Rove's case, American Crossroads is his major political action committee, but he also has GPS, Crossroads GPS. GPS stands for Grassroots Policy Studies, and again, grassroots is referring not to really grassroots people, it's to secret billionaires, people like Steve Wynn, for example, has been widely reported to have contributed millions of dollars. He's the casino mogul in Las Vegas.
And this seems to be the biggest difference between American Crossroads and Crossroads GPS. With American Crossroads, don't they need to reveal who has donated to this fund? But because Crossroads GPS is a not-for-profit, it does not have to reveal its donors?
Exactly. They can remain secret. So Steve Wynn has not commented. He's just withheld comment. It has been widely reported. And interestingly enough, Rove quietly got married in June, and Wynn was one of very few people attending. George W. Bush attended the wedding in Austin. And then Wynn, who had been a longtime Democratic supporter, he'd supported Obama, loaned Rove his private Boeing 737 for his honeymoon and later met them in Naples for the honeymoon.
How do these not-for-profits support the claim that they are not-for-profit, as you say that they are? I can't remember the terminology you used, but how do they claim that status? It does not seem like it could be possible to do that.
Right. Well, again, this is part of the butchering of the language. They claim to be social welfare organizations, and you can see Rove speaking to this issue on Fox News, and he's claiming he's informing people about the deficit or the budget, and that these are important social issues that the public has to know about. But the fact of the matter is, theoretically, they're not supposed to coordinate with any political campaign. Now, in Rove's case, of course, what very few people realize, I think, is that the political director of American Crossroads, for example, is a man named Carl Forte, who is very much a protege of Rove. And of course, Crossroads is Rove's political action committee. Forte also happens to be head of Romney's Political Action Committee, Restore Our Future. Now, they're not supposed to coordinate, but and I guess as long as he doesn't talk to himself, they're not. But it's the same person.
And, you know, this interesting way of defining things has definitely been satirized by people like Stephen Colbert and Jon Stewart, who talk about how, well, we can't talk about this, but if I talk about it on TV, well, maybe you'll be listening. Can you address that, this issue of purported independence?
Right. Well, I think they've done a wonderful job of it, Colbert and Jon Stewart. And I mean, the truth of the matter is, if you follow politics, it doesn't take a genius to know that Ohio, Pennsylvania, and Florida and so forth will be crucial, Michigan, will be crucial swing states. And the Romney campaign right now, it needs that political action committee because there are restrictions on how much you can spend during the primary season, and he spent a lot during the primary season. So right now, it's PAC money is filling in that. And anyone who reads the papers or follows the news can figure that out. It doesn't there doesn't have to be any real coordination.
I'm speaking with Vanity Fair contributing editor Craig Unger about Karl Rove. Craig's article appears in September issue of Vanity Fair, and he also has a forthcoming book called Boss Rove, Inside Karl Rove's Secret Kingdom of Power. Craig, you talk about Rove taking the long game. What is the strategy, do you think, in terms of where he would like to be, not just at the end of this election cycle, but, say, in 2 or 4 years?
Right. Well, you know, back when George W. Bush was president, they talked about the permanent Republican majority. And in some ways, it was Rove who had encouraged that talk. He's always compared himself to a little-known political operative named Mark Hanna, who helped put McKinley in the White House in 1896 and ushered in a long Republican era of about 40 years. And Rove has seen himself as creating this long-term political realignment. In fact, I think the Republican Party is very much in crisis. And one of the crises it faces is sort of the Hispanic time bomb. By that I mean there are about 50 million Hispanics in the United States now. In 2020, it's projected there'll be about 70 million. They tend to vote heavily Democratic. And in states like Arizona and Florida, Arizona and Texas, Texas alone has 10 million Hispanics. If they start to vote heavily, if they really start to turn out, those states will tip from red to blue. And I think Rove is trying to stave that off. So he has other operations in the works. If you've noticed, there's a lot of talk, and Rove has encouraged us a lot, of what is said to be voter fraud. Now, in fact, there's very little voter fraud. I don't know if you've ever gone to the polls and been told that someone under your name has already voted.
That has never happened to me, no.
Well, it doesn't happen to many people at all. There were only under 20 such cases, I know, between 2002 and 2006. But to stave that off, Rove and others have started among the Republicans a campaign that is really, I think many Democrats call it, a voter suppression campaign, requiring voter IDs and so forth. And a lot of minorities don't have state-issued voter IDs. A lot of poor people don't. A lot of the elderly, and they tend to vote heavily Democratic. So this has been going a broad campaign, really, to suppress the vote in more than 30 different states. And I think it's really, some people refer to it as a latter-day version of Jim Crow or as Juan Crow in some cases.
And have either of these, have any of Karl Rove's PACs supported this kind of effort?
Well, I don't know that it's a political action committee, but he Yeah, I mean, he does have. It's not under, that is, it's not under the Citizens United umbrella, but there are political action committees who are supporting this, and conservative groups that tend to work on a statewide basis in more than 30 states throughout the country.
I'm speaking with Vanity Fair contributing editor Craig Unger about his article, Boss Rove. It's published in the September 2012 issue of the magazine, and we will have more talk about Karl Rove after a break. You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show. I'm Julie Burstein in for Leonard on this Tuesday afternoon. And I'm speaking with Craig Unger. He's a contributing editor to Vanity Fair. And his article, Boss Rove, is in the September edition of the magazine. Craig, earlier you talked about Karl Rove, and you said that he doesn't care for the Tea Party. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Right. Well, he is, in many ways, embodies the Republican establishment. And when the Tea Party first started, they saw him as embodying someone who really had betrayed conservatism. The Bush era, they were free spenders in George W. Bush's administration. They violated a lot of basic conservative principles. He, in turn, had seen them as sort of wild-eyed mavericks. I don't think Rove himself has any real ideology. It's about winning. It's about power. But he sort of drew the line when candidates like Christine O'Donnell in Delaware came to the fore. And if you recall, she lost her bid for the Senate, but she had said she was not a witch, and though she had dabbled in witchcraft. And he found all that sort of a broomstick too far, I think, and that a lot of people were out of control. He was very much against Sarah Palin, and took pot shots at her from his perch at Fox News. You could sort of see his hand behind the scenes in the primary season, one by one, picking off Herman Cain, Donald Trump, calling Donald Trump a joke. He made fun of Herman Cain. There was a lot of speculation, if you recall, when Rick Perry was sort of ousted. He rose to the top. At one point, he was way ahead of Romney, and then he came crashing down. There was a lot of speculation that Rove was behind that as well. And he sort of sat above it all, but sort of pretending he was the political commentator at Fox News and at the Wall Street Journal, when in fact he was very much the party boss. So when he was taking a pot shot at Sarah Palin, let's remember, this is a guy who has hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars he can dispense, and if he's attacking Sarah Palin, he's telling her that money is not going to go to her.
Talking about all these different roles that he plays, it gets very confusing, and it also, it sounds complicated. You know, can someone be a commentator saying that he is, you know, this is his own point of view, but then, as you say, also controlling millions and millions of dollars that have a direct effect on an election?
Right. Well, I mean, I don't think he is, really is a commentator. I think everything he does is calculated to have a certain kind of effect. And what I realized when he and Sarah Palin were trading pot shots is, wait a minute, she was the former vice presidential candidate. She never formally entered the race in 2012, but it was widely thought she would, and she had positioned herself as such. And the role of Fox News in all this is fascinating because it has become effectively the Republican TV network. And at one point, it had five potential Republican presidential candidates as commentators, plus Karl Rove.
How involved is Karl Rove now in Mitt Romney's campaign?
Well, again, I think he's sort of operating by remote control, and he is certainly does not have the kind of very, very close relationship he had with George W. Bush. That's sort of been alter egos, or he, of course, was known as Bush's brain. It's not like that with Rove. But if you look inside the Romney campaign, you'll see one after another. There are many key figures there. There's a woman named Beth Myers, who in some ways was a protege of Rove's, and she worked with Rove for many years. She is in charge of the vice presidential selection for Romney. Very significantly, Ed Gillespie joined the Romney campaign as chief political strategist. He had worked with Rove in the Bush White House. He and Rove had together started American Crossroads at those meetings I mentioned earlier in April of 2010. It was at Rove's house, but they were co-hosted by Rove and Gillespie. And now he, through him, Rove can have an overall strategic voice in the Romney campaign. And there are others. I mentioned Carl Forte. Stuart Stevens is also in charge of Romney's media, and he had worked with Rove on George W. Bush's campaigns.
This sounds like a sophisticated strategy, and it's interesting that you say Karl Rove isn't, from what you can see, driven by an ideology. It's more the desire to win and to get power. Do you see, what do you see in the Democrats on the other side? Are there people who are willing to play this kind of game?
Well, they certainly don't play it as ruthlessly, and obviously the Citizens United decision allows groups like the unions or George Soros and so forth to make the same kind of contributions. As a rule, they don't do it, and if you look at especially the ads Rove has been doing, American Crossroads have been doing, many of them are really of questionable veracity. Most notably in the last couple of weeks, he's been taking after Obama for saying that if you built that company, you didn't do it. You got it with government help. And famously, he edited that quote so that it didn't explain that people built roads, there were tax breaks and so forth, and education, and all played a role in building the economy. But the Democrats often play as if they have one hand behind their back. Bill Maher and I believe Morgan Freeman have each put in $1 million in Obama's political action committees. But you don't have the multi-billionaires like Sheldon Adelson or on the Democratic side.
When you look at the game as it's being played right now, what do you see playing out over the next few months? Where do you think that this will lead?
Well, right now, I think if you look at the Electoral College map, it looks like Obama does have a lead. But you're going to see money flow into these at an enormous rate into 8 or 9 of the swing states. And that's where things could get a little wacky, so that it's just very unpredictable to say how that's going to play out. Also, politics tends to be unpredictable. There's always an event that can come out of the blue, whether it's, anything can happen in politics. Right now, I'd give Obama a bit of a lead, but I do not think it's over yet, and you're going to have enormous amounts of money going into states like Ohio, Pennsylvania, Florida, and so forth.
As you reported this story, what did you find that surprised you the most in terms of what had been going on?
Well, I guess it is how relentless Rove is, and there's so many different things he did, and some of this is in my book and not in the article, but just this week, for example, I don't know if people realize, but the former Alabama Congress governor, Don Siegelman, was sentenced to more than 7 years, I believe 7 years in jail. And what I saw in this was how Rove could take the judiciary, and these are the enduring consequences of what he did during the Bush years. And if you looked at the U.S. attorney scandal, it seems to me the real scandal was not just that 9 United States attorneys were fired because they weren't playing the Republican Party line. The real scandal was that the other U.S. attorneys who were appointed during the Bush administration were prosecuting Democrats relentlessly. And there were dozens and dozens, literally 200 or 300 rather promising Democratic politicians who were selectively prosecuted. And the case of Don Siegelman, I think, was the most is really a travesty. He was convicted of bribery, but he did the same thing that almost every elected politician did: is he took no money personally. He merely got campaign contributions and gave a non-paying appointment to one of his contributors. George W. Bush had done the same thing with over 100 of his appointees, and of course he wasn't a prosecutor for anything. And the Justice Department, and Rove played a very big role in this, started prosecuting Democrats right and left.
I'm speaking with Craig Unger. His article is called Boss Rove. It's in the September issue of Vanity Fair. This is WNYC and WNYC.org. Craig, how do you think Rove justifies using power like this? What's his understanding of the situation, ethically speaking?
Well, I find that really hard to answer. And it's not as though I haven't thought about it. I think it's about winning. I think anything, all's fair in love and war. It's just all about winning. And there are some very dubious elections in his past. There was an enormous amount of electoral fraud in Ohio in 2004. There are enormous amounts of attempts to suppress the vote. I mean, this is supposed to be a democracy. We're all supposed to be able to vote. You see that going on again and again. You have these... one of his techniques that is particularly dubious is are these sort of fake polls where he will... a political action committee will put out a poll, and they will ask the general public, are you registered to vote? Do you intend to vote? Does it bother you? And this happened when Bush was running against John McCain in the Republican parties in 2000. Does it bother you that McCain, these rumors that McCain fathered an illegitimate child with a black prostitute?
And that would be one of the questions in the poll.
Exactly. And it would be done in a way where it could not be traced directly to the campaign. It would be done as rumors that were put out there and just asking a question. And but they've happened in so many of his of Rove's campaigns that you have to see that this is something that is happening again and again and again.
Are there rules and regulations that govern these sorts of things?
Well, there are, but he does it it happens in such a clever way that it's very, very difficult to pin down. That is, you can track, for example, that University of Alabama students were hired by a political action committee, and that they were asking these questions, but there is a firewall, effectively, between the political action committee, which is supposedly independent from the campaign. Now, when you dig down, what you often find is the same campaign donors who've been funding George W. Bush, who've been funding, who are now funding Romney, who have worked with Rove for nearly 30 years, people like Bob Perry, who's a billionaire in Texas, no relation to Rick Perry, or Harold Simmons, who's a Dallas billionaire. They contributed to the Swift Vote Veterans for Truth and so forth that helped defeat John Kerry in 2004. And that this kind of technique has gone on again and again and again and still very effective. And that's why I hesitate to make any predictions on the 2012 election. These things will happen after Labor Day. That's when the money is going to come out, and you're going to have money like you've never seen before. altogether, the Republicans have nearly $2 billion on their side. And by contrast, John McCain in 2008 had $375 million.
Hmm.
So that's up by a factor of five, roughly.
And this money and these PACs are not just targeting the presidential campaign. Can you talk about what's happening in various states and state elections?
Right. Well, they are singling out, and Rove is really a brilliant strategist in this regard, and he's singling out some of the key Senate races that he wants to take over. So there's George Allen, Dean Henner, Rick Burks. He's spending millions of dollars propping them up, and these will be these are key races. It is possible that the Republicans will take the Senate. It may even be probable. And so you could have the Republicans controlling both houses next year.
Was Citizens United or Crossroads, I'm sorry, not Citizens United, but was Crossroads involved in the Scott Walker recall issue as well?
Well, a lot of money, about $30 million went into that race. And it showed the effectiveness because Walker ended up getting, I believe he outspent his opponent by 8-1. And, of course, he won, of course. But you have to ask, without the kind of money, would he have remained in office? And I think that kind of money is very, very effective.
As regular citizens who may not have the millions and billions that these people do to put towards their causes, it can be disheartening to hear and read about all of this. What's the role for the rest of us?
Well, that's a very difficult question. As I was writing this, I got solicitations from the Democrats asking that I contribute $3, and I just read that Sheldon Adelson was giving $100 million, and I thought, gee, there's got to be a better way. Frankly, if I couldn't write this, I'm not sure what the role is. Part of the problem here, of course, is that this is a Supreme Court decision. And even the president can't overrule the Supreme Court. And I think there will be legal fights in the future. And at a state level, there should be campaigns that challenge it. I happen to think the Citizens United decision was a terrible, terrible decision. And I'm not sure what the best way to answer that question is, unfortunately.
I guess for you it's writing articles. For the rest of us, we'll have to figure it out for ourselves if this is something that concerns us.
Yep.
As you look toward the election, what do you hope the book that's coming out, what kind of conversations do you hope it will spark?
Well, I think there is a real question about how our democracy is being endangered. And a lot of what I've been talking about, I think, is really antithetical to what a democracy is all about, whether it is this voter fraud or voter suppression campaign I talked about earlier, whether it's about the imprisonment of former Governor Donald Siegelman, which I think is just atrocious. When you have selective prosecution, when the legal system is used to prosecute one special group, whether it's blacks or Jews or Democrats or whatever, that is a real problem for democracy. And I think that has not been widely enough reported in the press at all. And I read the coverage of it in some of the papers this week, and I was just sort of stupefied that very, very few people got it.
Well, I think people listening will have a new way of thinking about it right now. I've been speaking with Vanity Fair contributing editor Craig Unger about Karl Rove, and his article appears in the September issue of the magazine. Craig Unger has a forthcoming book called Boss Rove, Inside Karl Rove's Secret Kingdom of Power, which will be published by Scribner next month. Craig, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.